Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily podcast on the Minnesota Timberwolves, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Welcome, 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 ladies and gentlemen, to another Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm your host, Colton Pileski, here with Tom Schreier. Tom, I gotta be honest, I accidentally said that I was the best writer in the world, but I didn't say it for my fake account, I said it for my real account. What do I do? Who do I contact?
Yeah, you got to talk to your PR manager. You've disappointed Zone Coverage and Locked On Podcast Network entirely with your actions. We cannot believe you did that. Yeah, that's something special, especially in a world where these guys get a lot of management. For, you know, they come out very clean and sharp when they're in the locker room, don't really say the wrong thing very often. And often those Twitter accounts and social media accounts are managed very well. So I guess I'm not floored that Kevin Durant would be using fake accounts to try to hype himself up. It's just it's a little goofy that he got caught.
And for those of you who don't know, we're referring to the story where Kevin Durant seemingly used his real account when he meant to use what maybe appears to be a fake account to defend himself on Twitter and go after somebody who commented on a tweet he posted. Hasn't really said anything about it or in defense of it or anything like that, but it is out there. You can go check out. There's tons of stories on it. A really good job by one of the SB Nation writers to track down not only the Twitter account, but also what looks to be the undercover Instagram account for Kevin Durant. But just a whole slew of awkwardness for Durant over the last couple of days. One of the questions I had for you is, do you think that his cavalier nature has kind of grown over the last, specifically 6 months, I would say? And do you think it has something to do with him being one of the more open NBA players? We see all the interviews he does with Bill Simmons and how he's kind of more of an open book than we're used to NBA players. You kind of think of LeBron James and how he doesn't really give anything to the media. And Kevin Durant has given up a lot of his personality to the media. Do you think this is one of the things we're seeing where he is kind of becoming more his own person and showing who he really is as a person? And that's one of the things we're going to see is maybe he defends himself on Twitter more than you think. Maybe he comes after fans more than you think because that stuff actually gets to him and he's fine with letting fans see that it gets to him. Do you think that's going to happen more?
You're saying the Bill Simmons podcast co-host, Kevin Durant, maybe exposing himself to the media a little bit? What is this, his fourth interview with Bill Simmons? In fact, LeBron's people, I've heard, I think I heard this from Simmons himself, are actually upset at Bill Simmons because, you know, Durant's on so much. I'll say this about Durant. I think he's a really smart guy. I think he articulates himself pretty well. I think he has a lot to say. He's definitely put himself in one of the more unique situations, just given that he, you know, kind of jumped on this opportunity when the cap escalated so quick to join the super team and all this. We all know this, going from Oklahoma City, Golden State. I have a couple different thoughts here. Just as a media guy, and I don't know if Durant always says this, I obviously haven't covered him, but you always hear, well, I don't listen to the criticism. I got to focus on my game, right? I'm just here to play basketball. Listen to what the coach has to say, this and that. You know, if Durant says that, that's not true anymore. We kind of probably knew that already, but when he gets caught commenting in the third person on Twitter with his Twitter account, and we think that he has all these secret media accounts, you know that's not true, right?
Yeah.
And so I think, especially given that these guys have media training, they've been around it their whole lives and stuff, you kind of got to choose who you are. Are you someone who's a little more reticent? I think of the extreme example being Tim Duncan, and there's a few guys like that in this league where I don't think Tim Duncan has Instagram. He's not on Twitter, is he? Or at least he doesn't have like an official account.
Yeah.
He's always been the same way, to my knowledge. He's maybe been in the league longer than I've been alive. I don't think that's true. Whatever he was, he started, I'm trying to think when he joined the league. That probably is actually completely false. But he's been in the league, or he was in the league a long time. You do have guys like that. You got guys like LeBron who I think care a lot about what people think about him, but also makes it clear that, after being through the whole Miami thing, the whole decision, going back home, potentially leaving again, that he's found a way to compartmentalize a little bit, maybe. But I don't know. And, as much as I criticize Durant, or will criticize him if he comes out and says, I don't listen to the criticism, I appreciate his thoughts. And I like that he's kind of come into his own. It is very, it was very easy to like Durant almost universally when not only was he this great player, obviously, in Oklahoma City, just like as he is now, but that, he signed his contract, kind of that extension, almost kind of quietly. You almost had to pry it out of him or look into it. He kind of, just signed the extension and said, I'm here, for a while. And he always kind of said the right thing. There was no reason to dislike him. Like, unless you just don't like the Oklahoma City Thunder, like there would be Sonics fans who maybe don't, but he was the last great Sonic. He did play there, So even Sonics fans, I don't think, really disliked him. They just disliked the franchise for moving. And, you're going to create enemies when you go and join the super team. And we understand his ideas for it. And, we all understand the value of free agency and all this. And you know what? I think a lot of people outside of the Golden State fan base probably in a private moment will go, man, it's fun to watch a team this good, right?
Yeah.
But Kevin Durant can no longer say, I don't focus on the criticism. I don't care about it. I don't know if he's ever really said that, but you hear it so often, it almost becomes ubiquitous, among NBA players as a way to kind of dodge questions and stuff like that. But, I expect him to be out there, generally speaking. I think he actually should have just been using his regular account to refute if he wants to do it. And really, someone should maybe pull him aside and say, don't worry about this. Colton Lesky, you have Twitter trolls. And you've been doing this show, what? How long have you been doing the show? Do you know offhand?
About 3 or 4 months, 3.5 months, something like that.
You have Twitter trolls. And to be fair, when you slander a man like Karl-Anthony Towns and don't make him number one on your list of centers and power forwards, and really I think he deserves to be point guards. When you do that, you deserve all the trolling you get. But everyone deals with it. All writers do. When you're a young writer, you learn that there's a lot of exposure on the internet, and there's comment sections, and there's Twitter, and there's this and that. Personally, I think Kevin Durant should probably not care what people say about on Twitter. He shouldn't. I just don't think he should be spending his time doing that. It's more valuable doing just about anything else. Yeah, I don't know. This is the weirdest thing ever. I don't want to linger on it too long just because it's a little bit of old news by now. We did discuss it on Wolves Wired if you want an extended talk. That was me, David Naylor, and Tim Fakeless. But we did have to touch on it. We haven't touched on it here on the Lockdown Podcast Network.
For sure. And the one thing that really strikes me as odd as we kind of wrap this up and move on to other topics is that for a guy who was willing to do, 3 hours with Bill Simmons of Q&A from Twitter, just kind of opening himself up and answering all these questions from fans, for him not to need a separate account to come after this fan and defend himself was a little strange, just that he felt like he couldn't say that from his own Twitter account and said it in the third person from an attempt to obviously use a different account. It was weird. It was strange.
I will say this, and we can wrap up after this. This seems to be more beef with Westbrook, maybe. I feel like that's the genesis of it. He can't care that much what just random people think, right? He has worked publicly in a public space. I don't know how many people showed up to his high school, although, he went to a very prominent basketball high school, but high school games or college games, but he certainly has worked in front of 18, 19, 20,000 people for all of his professional career. I can't imagine he'd be worried about what one fan would think, let alone one Twitter troll. It just seems like there is legitimate beef with him and Westbrook. You know, Westbrook doesn't just let this thing roll off his shoulders. That guy is driven by stuff like this. So I feel like that's the genesis of it. But, this is not a Timberwolves player, and I understand that this news has been out there for a little while.
Well, moving on to things that are based in the Timberwolves' future, I did an article. You should go check it out. It's on Zone Coverage. It's what to look forward to this NBA season. And I go over a few things from the overall NBA season that I want to see happen or that I'm looking forward to watching. But then I go into specifically what I'm looking forward to for the Timberwolves. And I don't want to go into all of them because I want to make these listeners go out and read this article too, because I want to get Zone Coverage plenty of views, plenty of reads. You should definitely check out all the writers on Zone Coverage. But there were a couple of things I wanted to get your opinion on. First, one of the things I dived into just a little bit is, can this team handle success? And I think what we're all secretly a little bit in the back of our heads worried about is that we're so excited for this season to start off now that Jimmy Butler's on the team, Jeff Teague, we have the bench all shored up with Jamal Crawford, Taj Gibson, Shabazz Muhammad's back. So we have a really good bench, really good guys that we brought in around Carl Anthony Towns and Andrew Wiggins. We're all a little nervous that this falls on its face in the first couple of months and it's not the team that we were really hoping would take the floor. But the flip side of that is, what if this team is really good, meets the expectations, and then in the last few months of the season is this great team that's barreling towards playoffs? How does a really young roster, for the most part, handle success? What is that going to look like for Wiggins, Towns, to be kind of the center of NBA talk and kind of the premier duo to watch in the NBA? How do they handle NBA success? So if they do just a great job, do you think that they're kind of quiet enough and kind of low maintenance enough to really handle successful, or do you think that becomes kind of a storyline headed into the back half of the season where maybe these young players, this is way too much of a spotlight, way too quickly in one off season for them? What do you think the storyline there is if they do really well and exceed the expectation?
Here is how I see this. The worst thing that can happen, obviously, is that in their first 10 games, they go like 3-7 and just look like the Wolves of last year. I don't think that will happen. However, to be fair, we at Zone Coverage, and even Colton, hosting this show for Locked On, we have a lot of interest in it. You want to build up that show audience. You want more and more of those Twitter trolls. I know you do. And for us,
that's why I wake up in the morning. That's why I wake up in the morning.
That gets you up. Rise and grind, baby. But sorry, I'm distracting myself again. We are sending Timmy Fakeless, who is basically our main Wolves beat writer at Zone Coverage, known for being at A Wolf Among Wolves, writing for Rolling Stone, Vice. He's going to be doing some stuff for Sporting News as well this year. Really, really great writer. We're sending him out to San Antonio, and we've kind of said in talking to the, Wolves fans and just or Wolves PR and internally, that if the team continues to be good, we'll be looking at going to that Chicago game and the Golden State game and hopefully Houston and all this stuff. But obviously, if there's no interest, it will kill fan interest. I think all this hype that's been built up and good nature the team has made, the new jerseys, the revamped arena, all this, I think it's flushed if they're just flat and they're the same old Wolves again, just with different uniforms and a nicer arena and with a more bombastic coach. And I think it will work out, and I'm not too worried if down the stretch when they get into crunch time or they get into a playoff series, even if it's a 4-5 matchup, which to me is optimal and somewhat, I think it's a reasonable expectation to see them in that 4-5 matchup. Yeah, could they fold? I mean, it's possible. They just can't. What they can't do is do what they did last year. Build big leads, blow them in the third quarter, right? Or blow them in the second half. If you look at the season as a whole and you go, well, okay, down the stretch, they start losing games they should win or get beat by teams that maybe are just better. That's just team development. That's normal. And I'm not too concerned with that because this is still a young team, a young core. There's still a reason to believe that they could get better. You'd have to go in the luxury tax to get players, and you'd have to, you know, make the right veteran minimum signings and stuff like that. But I'm not incredibly worried. I mean, is this something that concerns you, Cole Molesky, that they're going to maybe a collapse that takes them from the number three to the number five seed late in the season, or maybe a collapse where maybe you think they're going to win a playoff series and they get up 2-1 and then blow it and lose the next three. Does that concern you a lot?
That's really where I'm most concerned. Maybe not in the regular season, but playoffs, just for a team that a lot of these players that are going to be getting major minutes haven't played in a playoff series, primarily Karl Anthony Towns and Andrew Wiggins. That does concern me just a little bit, just because if they're a higher seed, maybe they're okay. But if they're a low seed for whatever reason coming in, and all of a sudden they're playing the Houston Rockets in the first round, Jimmy Butler cannot beat the Houston Rockets by himself, and Jimmy Butler and Jeff Teague can't beat the Houston Rockets, just the two of them. They need the whole team to try and at least push that to a seven-game series. And you never really know how a player is going to perform until they're in that actual spotlight. But leading up to the season, I think we can get a pretty good idea of how they're going to play, and hopefully that spotlight too big for them. And obviously these guys have been playing big games for a while. They come from Kansas and Kentucky, so they've been playing in huge games since college. But it just will be interesting to see once we get to the last month of the season and they're in a race for maybe that fourth or fifth spot in the playoffs, and once they get into a playoff series, how they perform. And you just really hope that the guys around them have been coaching them up to that point to make them ready for that spot.
Yeah, I mean, the way I look at it, the team has very much emphasized Butler, been in the playoffs a lot, Jeff Teague, Taj Gibson, Jamal Crawford. They continued to say how many playoff games they've been in. So this is a conscious effort to put an experienced team on, you know, around Towns and Wiggins, which, to be fair, most young players in the league do not have a lot of playoff experience. And pretty much since the one and done era, have had to play 1 year of what I would consider unpaid professional basketball, right? Where you're playing in front of big professional arenas and big audiences, and hopefully these guys have a March Madness experience or whatever. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, I don't know how much Towns and Wiggins are that much different than a lot of players are at their age. So this does not concern me a ton. It's worth bringing up. It's worth discussing. It's worth talking about. It's worth having in the back of your head, because it is funny. It's just how sports work, that when you raise expectations, all of a sudden, that, you know, if the Wolves get in the playoffs and get eliminated in the first round, even if they're swept, we'll go, well, they broke the curse, right? They got over that hump getting in the playoffs. If they win 50 games, you'll go, well, oh my God, you know, this was a 31-win team or whatever just a year ago. But all of a sudden, it's, you know, if they continue to reel off 50 game seasons, it's go, well, you won 45. What went wrong? You know, if you get into the playoffs next year, and like I said, I just don't want to get too ahead of things, because they really could, you know, you hope they make the playoffs. I mean, if they don't make the playoffs this year, you're like, what are you doing? But they could end up being a 7 or 8 seed and just getting smashed, just crushed, right, in the playoffs. And so, you know, I I'm not trying to elevate, I'm not trying to put the cart in front of the horse, to use a tired cliche. I'm trying to, which you're not supposed to do as a writer, I understand. But I think being reasonable, it's okay. This, you have to make the playoffs this season. The goal should be to get in that 4-5 game. After that, it's okay. Let's reassess expectations at the end of the season.
Well, and there's a difference too between them going to a playoff series and getting swept, and they made it a good run, versus them going to a playoff series, they get swept, and Wiggins and Towns combined for like 5 of 30 shooting. You know, like,
yeah,
there's different ways they can lose, where our expectations are, oh, you did a good job, or wow, they did not look good at all in the playoffs.
And this is what I'll say. I don't think this affects Wiggins. Wiggins has downsides. His defense has to improve. He's got to focus more. he's got to add weight where he can. I don't know really how much more he can add, but you know, we know the downsides. The upside to him kind of not being focused and kind of just being aloof sometimes is that this stuff seems to roll off his back. If anything, Andrew Wiggins gets better. Flip Saunders called him a popcorn player, meaning that as soon as he starts smelling the popcorn, as soon as the lights are on and it's showtime, he lights up. I go back to that Cleveland game where he made everyone in Northeast Ohio be like, man, that guy's good. We gave up someone really good. And I mean, think about it, Colton. It seems like he shows up for big games. That if anything, you have to make him focus against some random game against a non-contender from the East. When they play Orlando, it's like, Andrew, get up. Let's go, buddy. You know? But if he's... And that may change. Again, he's young and very talented. You'd think that would kind of override everything. But, you know, you look at those meaningful games when he's playing in division, and every division game I think is going to be pretty important this year, and especially when you're going to play the Clevelands and Chicagos and the Golden States and Houstons and San Antonios. Wiggins shows up. And you look at Towns. Towns has already won a game against a Golden State, you know, was the guy who scored the final basket in a game against the Golden State Warriors the year they won, or they lost, what, 9 games? He's been in big moments. And those the Kentucky guys, they come out, same with the Kansas guys, they come out ready to play, ready to go. And I just don't see them shying from the big moment. The question is, are there just going to be some boneheaded plays? And maybe, you know, occasionally you might go, Wiggins, you got beat. And what were you doing? Or I remember Towns stepping out of bounds. This is like the Sam Mitchell era where they were up like 10 really late and it all kind of fell apart once, you know, and this was 2 years ago when Towns stepped out of bounds. I'm trying, you know, occasionally things pop in your head where you're like, man, that could happen. But that's not the end of the world to me. The end of the world is if they win 40 games this year, right? It's like, you got to be better than that, especially when this is Tibbs' roster now. You know, he's in complete control now.
Absolutely. And that leads kind of into two of the other things I was looking for this year from the Timberwolves were the growth from Wiggins and Towns. And specifically there, when I'm looking at those two guys, I don't know if you agree with this or not, but I really need to see Wiggins grow leaps and bounds in the first few months here of the season, whereas Towns can develop over the next couple of years here, and I'm fine with that. But Wiggins is now in the perfect spot, I feel like, where he's going to be guarding the second best guy on the team that the Timberwolves are playing, and Butler's going to take that first guy. So, and he's got all these other defensive guys to help him kind of grow. He's in Thibodeau's defense. He's going to be learning a lot from him in the offseason, another offseason with his head coach. I really need to see his defense improve drastically from last year to this year, especially if you're not on the best guy. And I need to see that in the first couple months. I need to be able to sit there in December and say, yeah, Wiggins looks a lot better on defense. Whereas Towns, I need him to grow as well defensively, but I don't need to happen all at once. How do you feel about those two and their growth?
If you look at Andrew Wiggins' career trajectory, maybe this is the best possible kind of path for him. Because he goes to Cleveland and he doesn't get traded, let's say. And he becomes quote-unquote Scottie Pippen, which I always love that's like an insult. Like, Scottie Pippen, really good player. A lot of people will remember him for a very long time. Part of a very, very, you know, extremely good Bulls, historically good Bulls team. But, you know, he was going to become quote-unquote Robin to LeBron's Batman, and, you know, Pippen to Jordan. Probably would not have been great for a player that floated a bit in college. And, you know, has a lot of strengths that need to be adapted. You know, he has to adapt to the NBA game. But now it's actually probably a great time in his career maybe to take a bit of a backseat. Because Jimmy Butler, I mean, a big question is going to be, hey, how did Butler and Wiggins, work together in the offense? Well, again, for a guy like Wiggins who kind of shrugs everything off, it shouldn't be a big deal that Butler's your number one guy right now, late in games, that he's covering the number one guy defensively, because it just seems like, you know, that doesn't seem to be something Wiggins will learn very quickly, but seemed to be something Wiggins cares about. And he wasn't the number one guy to begin with, right? Towns probably does have the highest ceiling. He's going to be, you know, his jersey will be all over, right? He's going to be kind of the Garnett of this era.
Yeah.
I'm not with both of them. I'm not too worried. I've said this before on this podcast a lot. You know, Gibson's here, Butler's here, second year in town, or I mean, in Tibbs system. That all should help. Hopefully, they're thinking less and acting more and acting quicker because of that. But you're right. I think there's more focus on Wiggins. If anything, we should not take for granted what Towns has done. He is a spectacular player, but he seems to have the work ethic, be very focused, put forth a lot of effort. If anything, the chief complaint with him is that he's got to get away from taking all the blame and being like more specific with what he did wrong to show that he's learning, that he's progressing. And in terms of Wiggins, yeah, I think at the very least, there's just going to be more focus on him because you want to see the synergy with him and Butler on the offense. And you just want to see him reach that potential as a defensive player because, oddly enough, that's probably what would have developed first if he stayed in Cleveland. Because they would have said, look, to get minutes, and you need minutes right away. We know how many minutes he played as a rookie and has played so far in his career, and it probably has helped him accelerate his growth. To play that much, he had to be a defensive specialist, right? Because he's not going to be the best player. That's LeBron, right? So I think I'm curious now if, you know, if this is just kind of the right time for this to happen, where Butler's going to score a lot, Towns is going to score a lot, Teagues is more of a scoring point guard, you know? Wiggins is going to have to contribute something, but hopefully there's more of an emphasis on him becoming a two-way player because that is a very valuable. Imagine if you just can lock down the two best wings. How do you, I mean, you know what I mean? How is that not a winning formula? And so Wiggins, I think he'll understand that. And hopefully it's like, yeah, I don't have to be a volume scorer here. I can score when the offense dictates I need to score. But other than this, I'm actually more focused on making sure my guy, you know, keep him off the score sheet.
Well, and that's the other thing, too, is that when you do have the two wings locked up, if you're playing a team with a really good big, that's one of the things that Towns has to make sure he does at least a little better. He doesn't have to be elite defensively, but he has to be a little better. I remember last year I bought my SeatGeek tickets and went to a Kings game. SeatGeek drop right there as a little preemptive drop for SeatGeek. But I bought my tickets. I went to watch them play the Sacramento Kings, and Cousins did basically whatever he wanted in the paint. And I know, like, Cousins is a really great player and has been a really great player at center for years and years. But at the same time, you can't let him win basically every possession if you're Towns. You've got to get a few stops. You can't be going just trading shots back and forth with Cousins and Towns. You've got to have a couple defensive stops if you're Towns. So This might be a year where we've all been focused on Wiggins' defense, and it flips around and it gets focused on Towns because Wiggins does really well against the second man, and now the wings are locked up and they're dishing it inside into the paint as much as they can because they can't get shots, and a bunch of games kind of fall into Towns' lap defensively, and it's up to him a little bit. I can definitely see that happening as well.
Yeah, I you know, you bring up a good point and something I actually didn't expect here. If Wiggins does his job, yeah, you know, that's one thing I've wondered all along. Look, it's really hard to stop Cousins. Most teams in the league will have trouble with him. They had, you know, most teams in the league had trouble. Even as we've gone into the small ball era of versatility, everyone can play everywhere. You know, at the very least, the Memphis Grizzlies overachieved using their big bruisers, right?
Yeah.
And so I'm less concerned about it just with the way the game's going, although you always wonder if this is a cycle, right? And you're not probably going all the way back to, you know, grind it out, half court play. You know, no one wants that. But, like, yeah, you wonder if they have a big guy that even if Towns understands the defense, can he be taken advantage of just because he's smaller than some of those guys? But I think that's something that should take care of himself. I mean, Cole Aldridge is still on this team. You assume he's kind of sort of trade bait, if not completely trade bait. But, you know, you would think his role, and I know he didn't do it last year and how many minutes he played and all that, but his role would maybe be locked down those guys in certain situations. The other thing, too, is you wonder what Gorgui Dieng and Towns add up to if they, you know, Dieng obviously knows the defense, but, you know, if they both are simpatico in that defense. Yeah, I mean, that's a concern, but, man, I mean, that's a luxury, right, at that point. I mean, at that point, then you just free up some cap space, maybe ask Glenn Taylor for some luxury that sweet, sweet luxury money, which you should be able to if you make the playoffs this year, and especially if you look competitive, maybe you go and get a bigger guy. I mean, I'm not super concerned, but that will be something teams will pinpoint, assuming they have the personnel to do so with the Minnesota Timberwolves, especially if Wiggins and Butler literally are just choking out the oxygen from wings, even the best wings in the NBA.
Well, that's the other thing, too, is you got to be a smart basketball player in today's NBA, too, because there's so many, like, wacky positions and lineups that you're going to face. Like, if they're playing the Warriors and Steph and Clay are all tied up outside, there's going to be plenty of times, I think, this year where Durant's going to be the five. And then your talent, that's your responsibility. You got to be able to look alive and make sure that you're getting out on the edge, too, because Durant's definitely not going to play just in the paint if he's technically the five out on the floor and he's the biggest guy. So I think Towns has the raw talent and the tools just because he's so athletic, but it's just about now recognizing who is your responsibility. There's plenty of times where he's going to be playing all different kinds of positions because so many small ball lineups will put guys like Durant, guys like LeBron James at the five spot, even though they're not the traditional center. But that's all of a sudden your responsibility and your assignment. Now you got to go out and guard guys like that. And I know it won't always necessarily mean that he's guarding those guys. Jimmy Butler, I'm sure, will probably take a guy like LeBron more times than not. But still, you got to be ready for those switches and those changes into the lineup, into the defensive set. And hopefully you see a little bit of growth from Towns. Last year I didn't really see it, but that'll be another interesting curve for this Wolves team. One of the other things I was looking forward to this season, going back to that lineup diversity, was how the Wolves look now. Now they have kind of a lot of pieces to play with, and I know about a Tom Thibodeau team, you're usually talking about defense. But on the offensive side, I think this team can be the most versatile it's been in a long time, just with all the different guys that can shoot. You got Jeff T, you got Jamal Crawford, you got Tyus Jones, I think will be an interesting piece they can move around. Do you think that they could have some really interesting small ball lineups if they're playing a team like the Warriors and they just want to try and play transition with them a little bit? Or if you're playing a team even like the Suns and you want to try and go small ball on them and try and outpace them in their own game, do you think they could have some interesting lineups for that kind of game?
Yeah, the way I look at it is Tibbs has emphasized this since day one. He knows the trends of the leagues. He's obviously been it, you know, had a sabbatical year where he talked to a lot of the best organizations in the NBA, and this is what all the best teams are doing. I think they really are shaping up to be a team that has the versatility, has a lot of talent, can throw a lot of different looks at you. It could make a halftime adjustment if you have to, or maybe even just a timeout adjustment, personnel adjustment. And they have some cover now. If one guy has a cold night, you would think, you know, someone else would step up and replace their scoring. I'm not incredibly worried about that. The only concern I have in this in today's game really shouldn't matter as much is just, yeah, what do you do against Cousins and some of the, you know, those dominant big men in the league? I think, you know, I mean, I literally said this 2 minutes ago, but like that is the chief concern. Outside of that, the other one is just if you get in a three-point contest, and again, that's more on the defense than the offense, but where does the three-point scoring come from? And if you really need to space the floor, how is that done? It probably can be done cumulatively with a lot of good but not great or excellent, you know, three-point shooting. But, I mean, that's another weakness I see. But generally speaking, yes, I see a lot of versatility. And certainly what you really have to do, I believe, in the NBA, especially as you get away from scheduling losses and as the league gets away from 4 and 5 nights, is just clean up against the bad teams. Don't take a night off. You know, don't overlook opponents that you should beat. And then the phase two is, you know, how do you routinely be seen as not, you know, San Antonio's coming to town, but San Antonio's saying, hey, Minnesota's coming to town, or, you know, Cleveland or Golden State or whatever are saying, hey, Minnesota's coming to town. We got to look out for them, or we got to go to Minnesota. We got to look out, you know, Target Center's really tough to play in. They got a really good team, but you know what I mean? And that seems like a funny concept, but you have to get, you know what I mean? It, like, that's a completely normal reaction. You're like, okay. But, you know, like, that's, you have to get there. But I do think there's versatile enough where hopefully against any, a bad team can't just play a favorable matchup, right? Hopefully they're good enough where it's like they have enough talent, they have enough versatility where you can just clean up against these bad teams. You're not going to find yourself in many just matchup issues.
Absolutely. And you talk about scoring. I know it's a little bit of a gamble, but I kind of like that they have a few guys that can average 20 points but explode for like a 40-point game once a week or once every couple of weeks. Like, I think they for really big games, you can peg Wiggins in for like 40 points. And then if you just have that spread around evenly enough where some nights you think Jeff Teague might actually have like a 30, 35-point game, and then there'll be plenty of games, I'm sure, where Jimmy Butler will have about 30 points, and there will be plenty of games where Towns will have 30 points. I think there's enough guys who are really good on offense, both off-ball and creating their own shot, that they're just going to kind of trade off. And it might take about 10, 15 games to get into a rhythm of that, just because this is obviously the first time these guys have played together. But once they find that rhythm and just recognize, ooh, Wiggins is hot tonight, get him the ball, or, oh, this is Teague's night from outside, or Towns is just owning these guys in the paint tonight, we'll just feed it to him. Once they get in a rhythm of really feeling each other's games out, I think it'll be really fun to watch how every night, I think there could be potential for a different Timberwolves to really go off and have a big offensive night. And that's how I think this team wins on offense, not necessarily having a couple guys like the Warriors do with Thompson and with Durant and Curry, who can just destroy you from outside with threes, and that's kind of what they do. I think the Wolves will be the team where they just have one guy who, once they get hot, they just keep feeding them and feeding them, and it's just a different guy every night.
Yeah, I mean, if anything, I want this to work just because it would be fascinating. You know, I go back to, I enjoy watching teams like the Spurs, like the Golden State Warriors, like Cleveland, because, you know, you're like, man, I just don't know. They can do so much. The ball, quote unquote, has energy. You hear that from some coaches, where it's whipping around, and they're, you know, this is specifically, I guess, Golden State and San Antonio more than anything. But, you know, that creates opportunities, and you kind of be like, man, I don't know how that guy, you know, racked up this many points, but it's because that's how the system works, and because it's great coaching and all that. I mean, obviously, great talent. And so, yeah, I hope the Wolves become one of those teams, because it's been a while since the hometown team here, right? You could say that about them, even in their better years. And I understand better is a relative word here, but even in their better years, I don't think it's quite been like that. So yeah, you're right. I mean, I think it's fun, especially now. Media day is tomorrow, right? They haven't played a regular season game. It's fun. I do, as much as I don't want people to, you know, overreact to one loss early in the season or something. It is fun to kind of speculate on what this team could be, because I do really think they can be a special team this year.
Absolutely. And I did want to do, before we head out, I did want to do one thing that you're looking for just in general in the NBA season. But first, I want to talk to you about SeatGeek. Buying tickets to sports and concerts can be complicated, but there's a better way, a simpler way to buy with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to live events. With SeatGeek's seamless mobile experience, you can buy and sell tickets in just two taps. SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. There's nothing quite like seeing your favorite team or musician in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for great value. SeatGeek saves you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals. And to get you the most bang for your buck, SeatGeek grades every ticket based on value to help you immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. Plus, every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. You can buy SeatGeek tickets for the Timberwolves already. You go out there, find your game that you really want to see, your matchup. Go out there and get tickets for October 18th. Go travel with the team. Go to the Spurs game. Go and get tickets for the Jazz. They're going to be here on October 20th. Go find your tickets right away for the Timberwolves, because this team is going to be hot, a hot commodity. You don't want to miss out on them.
Yeah, no, I'm hoping people bust out their SeatGeek app like Colt Molesky and get out to those games. Cause I do, as much as, you know, again, I've covered Wolves games with an empty or whatever, relatively empty arena. And there's always been a diehard core fans, you know, 10,000-11,000 people that are great. That's wonderful. I hope they're, you know, they should, they're obviously gonna be here for the good times too, hopefully. But Yeah, I mean, on those few games where, you know, KG came back, or, you know, the stretch run with Rubio and Love in that, you know, that 1 year and stuff. It's fun. It reminds me of being young and watching those games where you had Garnett, Gugliotta, Marbury, you know, Terrell Brandon, all that, you know, the good teams and kind of what the target center used to be. And so, yeah, you know, this is an affordable way to do it. You can save a little money if you want to grab dinner before, a couple beers at the game or whatever. And really, you can be like Colt Molesky. And I'll be honest, I'll be the first one to say it. That's my guy there. I've always aspired to be a Colt Molesky, and one day I'll get there.
Someday.
By the way, Colt Molesky's greatest strength, and this had to make the podcast, I called Colton about this show a couple hours ago. You know where I'm going with this. I'm literally had just eaten lunch. I got a little food coma going. I'm a little tired. You know, it's Thursday. Before your phone rang, I have no idea how you picked up your phone that quick. It scared the hell out of me. I thought someone had, like, broke into my apartment. Colton Molesky, the only thing he does faster than pick up his phone is get tickets with SeatGeek. Incredible, incredible man.
Hey, you know what? You never know which phone call is going to be your last phone call. I'm out there to perform, to make a difference for the team. I'm out there grabbing calls like I'm grabbing drinks. Quickly.
Oh, God. That was the scariest. Literally, I thought someone broke into my house, dude. I just had no idea what happened.
That was the highlight of my day probably already.
Oh, yeah. That gave me the heebie-jeebies, man.
All right. One thing that you're looking forward to just across the NBA. Give me one thing. Because I have mine locked and loaded. I'm so ready for my hopeful anticipation to pan out. What are you ready for?
Because I don't like to answer questions, I'm going to answer this my own way. I'm going to say for the Minnesota Timberwolves, I am curious just kind of how this media day goes. What Cole Aldrich says, you know, like kind of what his role is and where his head's at, given everything we know. How Tibbs approaches it, does he really downplay expectation? Or I'm assuming that's the direction to go, or does he hype it up kind of to try to fill out the arena and build some momentum for the team, and just kind of, especially what the more veteran players are going to say, just kind of, you know, again, do they create hype or dampen expectations? Kind of what they say about Towns and Wiggins and the rest of the roster and all that. So I am very curious. I'm very excited for Media Day. It's a 4-hour event. It starts at 9, which should not be an issue, but I'm not a morning person. And, you know, I don't know. I'm very curious about that. But NBA-wide, to actually answer the real question you asked, I'm very curious about the Cleveland Cavaliers this year. Just kind of, is this LeBron's last run? You know, how does Isaiah Thomas look? What you know, more broadly, what is this Boston-Cleveland rivalry going to be like? Especially if it's just kind of a one-year affair. And, you know, if LeBron goes elsewhere, that's not going to last very long. Just that whole situation, that unfolding drama, I'm given how talented that team should be, and just kind of, you got to imagine, just talking to the people I know from Cleveland, they're, you know, the Indians are doing well, but that team still kind of has their hearts with winning that championship and breaking the Cleveland curse. Just everything unfolding there and the rise of Boston to kind of dismantle them, I'm very curious, very interested in.
Absolutely, and that's their first game of the year. Boston is playing on the road in Cleveland.
Yeah, no, I mean, and it couldn't be better. I just, it's probably the two only really relevant teams in the East. I mean, you're always curious kind of what Washington, maybe Toronto does, but man, I mean, yeah, that unfolding drama is very interesting to me.
Absolutely. Well, I am so ready to see Hoodie Mello just unleashed on the league.
Oh,
I'm doing everything I can to change the rules so Melo can wear Carmelo Anthony, who plays for the New York Knicks. I'm doing everything I can so that he can wear a hoodie on the court while he's playing the games. I'm doing everything I can with Nike to try and switch the Knicks jerseys into hoodies. I'm trying to bring Hoodie Melo to the regular season NBA because he is an assassin in the pickup games that I have watched just constantly throughout the summer. He is so much fun to watch, so much better than the Carmelo Anthony we've seen over the last few years. I want to see Hoodie Melo in the league. I want to see it so bad, Tom.
I want to see Hoodie Colt Molesky play some pickup basketball. I know that is superior hoodie man.
You know, actually, I know this has nothing to do with basketball, but I'm in an intramural flag football league at MSU, and we had a game. We had a game the other day, and it just reminded me how I might do a little too much talking in between plays. There might be a little too much jabbering.
Oh, we're 45 minutes in. The audience is wondering why we're still talking right now.
They're always wondering why we're talking.
The people.
It's a constant state of wonder for them. I'm surprised and grateful that they still listen to us. Well, anything else you want to add to that?
No, I think we're good. I will be at Media Day tomorrow. We're going to have pretty much a three-part series on this. I'll have some kind of instant reactions. I'm sure we'll do a lockdown. We'll do a Wolves Wired. Timmy's going to do a big thing, likely for Monday. Colton said he's going to write over the weekend. I'll be on zone coverage. Obviously, we'll be contributing to the Lockdown Podcast Network all season long. And this is exciting, man. This is, you know, this is the official kickoff. It's basketball season now, and we're hoping this is the beginning of something big where the Wolves at the very least are playing meaningful basketball from now and, you know, in the immediate future.
Absolutely. We're all really excited to get this season kicked off and underway. He's Tom Schreier. I'm Cole Molesky, and this has been another Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
With the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.